appreciation of their property's outdoor areas, making gardens and paddocks, not just their dwellings, more pertinent and important than ever.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
if you couldn't escape the noise, you'd very quickly get very upset. I'm just checking.
Well,
I think we've all
got to gain more appreciation of our dwellings and gardens.
And our gardens. Mm. Just checking. I have a feeling I may have skipped over one part, so I'm just going to ensure that I've got through everything, if that's okay. No, I think I have got there. Obviously, I'd just like to point out to the panel that where I've referred to conditions and upper limits, there are footnotes that identify the conditions of concern as best possible. And I've also tried to identify, obviously, the council's version of the conditions in the 6th of August set are very different to Kiwi Rail's. So I've tried to identify whose conditions I'm supportable or concerned about. And I'd just like to finish by, obviously the concluding comments are that Kiwi Rail has sought requirement for activities which exceed its powers as a requiring activity, and for those aspects of the project, my submission, no designation is available. The notice of requirement contains insufficient information to enable the panel to undertake a proper assessment, and some of those areas have been identified. The notice of requirement is to the extent that it can be determined inconsistent with Part 2 of the Act, and there's just simply not some details as to some of those effects, and for others they're so significant that in my submission it would be very hard to reach that test. It will result in significant adverse effects on the environment that are not adequately avoided, remedied or mitigated by the proposed conditions, and while Council's conditions or suggested conditions do go some way to addressing some of those things, Council's experts are in a very difficult position because it's very difficult to provide a condition for an effect if you don't know what that is or what that's going to be. So they may be doing a good job in the circumstances that they've been provided, but I think there's an overwhelming question as to whether they should be looking at conditions at all. The positive effects of the freight hub have been overstated and wrongly rely upon future roading improvements that may or may not occur, and Kiwi Rail's consideration of the alternatives process was flawed in the manner that we've discussed. In the circumstances, adding up all those things, it's my submission, the designation is not reasonably necessary for achieving the objectives of the requiring authority. Dr. Whittle and Fox's position remains, as stated in their written submissions, as amended obviously by or advanced upon in these submissions and in their personal presentations that they will deliver. They request that the panel recommend to the requiring authority that the requirement be withdrawn. However, in the unfortunate event that the panel is inclined to recommend the notice of requirement is confirmed, it is requested that the designation be severely modified and that the conditions imposed, that the panel try to impose conditions to address the concerns raised in these submissions and in Dr. Whittle and Dr. Fox's personal submissions to the panel. Those are my submissions.
Cool. Thank you very much. Panel members, there's quite a lot of content in this report, and we're coming close to five, and the two options are use the present time available to plan our next part of the hearing, facing the reality that Drs. Whittle and Fox will need to come back in any event, and I would value the opportunity to reflect on these submissions and ask questions in light of my review of the conditions, or alternatively box on. Do you prefer option one or option two?
I have a couple of questions that are front of mind right now that I would appreciate being able to ask before I lose my mental thread on them. But I think there would, as you say, be value in actually having time to absorb what has just been put before us, because as you say, there's a lot to get into there.
Okay. Does everyone agree with that?
Yes. That's fine. I have some questions for Ms. Hancock. If we are going to reconvene and question Ms. Hancock and hear again from Mr. Fox and Ms. Whittle, it might be useful for Ms. Hancock to have been able to have a look at Kiwi Rail suite of conditions dated the 13th of August.
Yes.
I was hoping that there wasn't another version.
Yes, there is another version. I think it would be quite useful if you have had that opportunity when we do talk to you again.
What I propose to do, because I think it is quite a thorough submission that I'd like to absorb some points on. So why don't we get the... I've been doing some questioning as I go along, and now my mind isn't at the point where I can ask any more without reflection. But you clearly have some threads that you want to explore immediately, so let's just go with that.
If I might... Sir, obviously my clients are have limited resources in terms of my attendance here, so I would probably, without having discussed with them, I'm not sure that me coming back for another morning to attend in person would be possible. I am happy to answer questions and potentially attend via...
we'll accommodate that.
Yeah, sorry, it's just a cost issue, otherwise I'd be delighted to
be
there.
Yeah, sure. So... with that thought, ask as many of your questions now, and to the extent that I have any, we have any additional questions on reflection, we can port Ms. Hancock in at the right time. Is that convenient?
And I'm happy to answer anything in writing if you've got written questions that I can reflect on to make that process more efficient.
Okay, thank you. So, Commissioner Mackinson.
Thank you very much. My main questions go back to the your submissions on the MCA process and its veracity, if you like, for want of a better word. And you made two points, and one was around the lack of clarity on knowledge of the team of the Provincial Growth Fund, and I think we've explored that at some depth already. And the other one was around the size of sites in that first tranche of review, if you like. And whilst you were going through your submission, I was looking at the MCA process and Appendix F of the overall documentation. And what I just want to explore with you is in the early parts of the MCA analysis and decision conference and process report, it discusses that eight areas were identified for consideration, and then the ninth site was the existing domain of. And what I guess I just want to explore a little is realistically looking at the length of track that or NIMT frontage that is available between the river and Fielding, taking out Township of Bunnythorpe and taking out the urban area of Palmerston North itself, there's about 18 kilometres of track. And realistically, we're looking at probably about a kilometre either side of that railway for that initial review. And my understanding of your contention is that looking at a 500 hectare site for you ultimately need, let's say, 200 for round numbers, and here we got to the 177, is too big. But when you look at 18 kilometres, 2 kilometres wide, that's about 3,500 hectares, and you're trying to narrow this down to 200 at a time. So I'm just trying to understand why you consider a first cut approach of looking at a larger area to assess suitability to then focus down within the suitable areas on actual sites is not an acceptable approach.
I think my It's a very good question. I think the response to that is that how do we know that there weren't other sites that would have got to, and I think in the second phase, the concept and the master planning process came up with a 120 hectare site being required. So how do we know that there weren't 120 hectare sites available that would be, and remembering you're doing an alternatives assessment, more suitable based on that. So if you're just looking, focusing on very large sites, there potentially, and we don't know, have been other sites that were excluded. And we just simply don't know if they were entirely greenfield sites where no one lived. We don't know if they were sites where there may not be wetlands or stormwater issues or traffic issues or any of those kind of things. So that was simply, in my mind, there was no check at that stage two that they hadn't missed a site that would have been a better option. They never revisited the initial nine sites once they had the 120 as confirming how much land they needed for their project.
So within about 3,500 hectares, if you're looking at 120 hectares each, that's 30 individual sites, assuming no overlap. Yeah. So what I'm trying to understand is whether you feel that KiwiRail should have looked at 30 individual sites as a starting point. Because I'm just a little concerned that my understanding of the whole MCA process is that there is no requirement on the body undertaking that process to choose the best ranked site overall. It is to demonstrate that they have considered alternatives. They don't have to get the best site. It doesn't have to be the cheapest, the most cost-effective, the one that has the least effect in any particular field. They just have to demonstrate that they have considered alternatives in a thorough method. So I'm struggling to understand your contention on that they may have missed better sites when there's actually no requirement on them to look for the best site.
Something that may assist with that is that there's an assumption in your question that all the 450 to, all the larger sites, or to 800, all added up to create or line up so that they formed this total corridor of available land within that. And it may be the case somewhere, but I don't think I've seen that it included, or that those sites actually matched up in a suitable jigsaw to include all the land between the existing and the Nympton and the Reens and anything like that. So I think my point here, and it's very... Picking through the MACA process and picking through what KiwiRail said its parameters are, I think it's very important not to make assumptions as to what they did or did not do if it's not specified there. And there's no ability to know that it included all that land and that they'd, considered every single area, and so we can't say that there wasn't a 120 hectare site that wasn't that was missed.
I was using that as a point to demonstrate that, if you really take this to extremes and that they have to look at every single site within the study area, they could potentially have had to look at 30 sites, which is clearly not practicable. So this is around the practicability of the process, and that if they start with broad areas, 1 to 9, and they look at the broad area and go, okay, area 7, we can't do because of flooding, area 8, similar problems. It's also right next door to a big residential growth area, so they're fatally flawed and out. And they then winnow through that first cut and start focusing on actual sites within areas that they consider are reasonable to look at in depth. Is that not fulfilling the MCA requirement to consider alternatives where there's no responsibility or impetus to pick the best site?
If if by doing that, let's say KiwiRail had exaggerated the size of the land required to exclude, you know, that it's exaggerated. It's not, the designation that we're looking at is not for between 450 and 874 hectares or acres. It's for ultimately the site being required and sought is 177, but what they required for their, we'll say they required for their concept master plan is 120. So I think in there, dismissing sites in that initial first look that were less than 400 odd means, in my submission, that they weren't. It's not a true alternative, because the alternative that they should have been looking for is a site that matched their concept plan, so 120 with the ability to buffer the effects. And again, in my submission, you know, if it turns out that they can't actually do what they say they can do with their requiring authority power, then you've really got to ask, well, whether it's 120 or whether it should be 70 hectares.
Let's approach this from a slightly different way then, because I don't think we're quite getting to grips with this. If they hadn't considered any sites, let's say, to the west of State Highway 3, and only considered from State Highway 3 up to Fielding, which is essentially where the second round of sites largely ended up, would you have the same concerns about the MCA process in terms of the scale of site? Because all the sites that were removed as having fatal flaws were west of State Highway 3.
I think I would still have the same concerns, and I appreciate that might not be the answer that you're looking for, but as I see it, the 400 was it filtered out, or the initial size filtered out sites, and later on didn't go back and look at sites that may have been discounted through that. There may very well have been sites that were part of sites that were discarded, where a 120 concept plan may have actually effectively fitted without having those concerns that were identified. So in my submission, the 400 to 800 hectares as a starting lens was too big a lens. If your project ends up being far less than that, and it's a half or a third of it, then they should rightly have been searching for sites that could have accommodated those activities for the size of the activities that that was required, the size of the designation. And that's simply my point. It's not. I don't think that we need to demonstrate that there were sites of that nature that were excluded. I'm just saying the process that they set up to do that, and first looking at the 400 to 800 hectares and discounting anything else, meant that there may have been sites that were suitable that either weren't identified in those first large sites, or parts of those sites may have been able to be accommodated with a smaller plan but weren't.
Thank you. You've made your view clear. I don't have any further questions at this point.
Commissioner Sweetman?
I'll try to be quick. I'm sure I will be. Ms. Stancock, you talked about the issue about what effects we should be considering as part of this notice of requirement. So you referred back to, I'll just actually get exactly where you were talking about. So your paragraph 70, 71 and 72, so where you highlighted to us that, you know, we need to be considering the effects on the environment of allowing the requirement, and that we should not necessarily ignore the regional planning framework in its entirety. Now, the tests under Section 171 are very similar to Section 104, aren't they? In terms of considering the effects, considering the higher order planning documents and the regional plan and the district plan, and considering any offsetting or compensation measures. And we talked about, yes, it doesn't have that thing that 104 does in terms of you may disregard the permitted baseline. But Section 104 also needs to be read in the context, does it not, of Section 31 of the Act in terms of the functions of a territorial authority. Do you think that
Section 168 does, or 171 does?
Well, Section 104 does. Do you think Section 171 does, given that when we're talking about a notice of requirement, it clearly overrules only the provisions of a district plan and regional consents are still required?
I did actually, I think that's a really good question, because that is something that I did think about myself when I was thinking about how to approach this, because obviously the panel is grappling with the issue of, you know, what level of detail does it require for those matters which the district council would usually leave to the regional council in the split of jurisdiction. What I came back to, and again it's relatively high level, is yes, 171, 1A, you have to consider the national policy statement, you have to consider the coastal policy statement, regional policy statement, proposed policy statement, and plans. So you do need to look at those. Also, and I think the point that I made in my submissions was that it also has that requirement to look at part two. And part two matters aren't split by jurisdiction of councils. So you need to look at that full suite of 5, 6, 7, and 8.
That's no different to the construct of Section 104, though, is it?
No, not. Well, I think it depends on whether you're resorting back to Part 2 or not.
But Section 104, you have to resort back to Part 2 as well.
Yes. I couldn't helpfully find any case law, and I did look at this point as well, as to the extent of, I'm assuming your question is where you get, what extent do you stop considering regional matters under the designation?
Well, yes, that, and in particular you then talk to us about Transmission Gully in terms of obviously the lapse period, but you talk to us about that being a comprehensive approach where it was the notice of requirement and it was a plan change and it was regional consents as well. And doesn't that seem to imply then that there are separate regional consenting requirements that go hand in hand with the notice requirement?
Transmission Gully, obviously, yes. So NZTA in that case did pursue its full project, all the resource consents it needed at a regional level for that project. And I think it also had to, in advance of doing that, seek a plan change to the regional plan, a private plan change to the regional plan for some of the items in there so that it could apply for consent. So that's the situation where the requiring authority or the Board of Inquiry there had the full picture of all the effects in front of it that it was considering, including the region. So it did look at the regional plan and it did look at those. I don't think I have an easy answer for you, because I couldn't find any examples of the regional of how you treated those matters just where there was a notice of requirement for a designation and it wasn't being advanced with the resource consents. It is, these days, it's a really unusual approach, and you'll see I have trawled quite extensively through notice of requirements in various projects to try and find one where we could provide an example of that bright line. But the general, the modern approach seems to be that these things are advanced with the regional consents at the same time so the effects can be considered. I'm sure that Council for Palmerston North City Council will be making submissions on that point because I know it's in contention and I don't want to pass the buck. But I think where I can usefully stop is that you need to be able to look and satisfy overall that those things in 6, 7 and 8 are considered. And and you need to make sure that they're being provided for. And those things, you've got heritage, you've got Treaty of Waitangi, you've got iwi, you know, iwi cultural values, you've got natural values. And also there's a requirement to look at the NPS and NES. And as we know with the NPS on fresh water, the National Environmental Standards are required, need to be looked, you know, need to be looked at there too. So if you have to apply those, and district councils do, then you know it means that your inquiry on some of these things might actually go quite far, rather than stopping on the basis that resource consent needs to be regional, you know, that can be dealt with at a regional consent level. I think that's... So it may not be that you're getting consent for those. You know, the part... Kiwi Rail's not seeking or requiring you to give it consent for those regional activities that would be required in the regional plan, but I think you need to go a long way to knowing what they are and what those effects might be able to satisfy your assessment of part two.
It has been a matter that the panel has been giving a lot of thought to, clearly. Now, I signalled before in terms of you hopefully will be able to have the opportunity to have a look at those conditions from the 13th of August, because also the panel has been considering, obviously, the... I will talk about it as an envelope of effects, and you've talked today about the certainty of that envelope of effects and the limits as well. And so if you do have the opportunity via your client's goodwill to have a look at those conditions and particularly the points that you've raised today, do you think Kiwi Rail is heading more in the direction that would satisfy your client's concerns in that regard?
I'll obviously have to take instructions and check on those.
Yeah.
One thing that I must say is trying to work your way through all of the reports and what's happened and obviously not attending the hearing, that there are aspects that you do miss. And and also any comments that I do provide on conditions need to be viewed in the context that my clients aren't supportive of the notice of requirement at all, and so while they probably appreciate the ability to approve them if they're granted, I don't think that any of my comments saying that these things are okay should be taken that they accept the conditions.
I guess
identify whether some of those issues that I've raised are still problematic, if that would be helpful. One other matter which might be useful is I'm not sure to the extent of whether the panel would be issuing a draft version of those conditions once it had had its deliberations to enable parties to comment on. There are quite a few parties I know, particularly the party represented by Mr. Slyfield, who've refused to engage with the conditions because they don't support the freight hub, and also probably due to the complexity of trying to figure out what version you're looking at. But that may, in my submission, probably be a more useful process from a submitter perspective to have feedback on any draft conditions being considered at a point that a decision had been made.
I'll let the chair comment on that one.
He's grinning.
Well, I don't. I think we'll be talking amongst ourselves. We're certainly not at that point, and.
It may be something that you want to consider when you're discussing.
Yeah. Thanks, Commissioner Sweetman.
Nothing further top of mind at the moment from me, thank you.
And Commissioner Pomare?
Kia ora, Ms. Tancock. Thank you very much for the diligent and thoughtful way in which you've put your legal submissions together, which clearly address core issues at the heart of KiwiRail's notice of requirement and the panel's consideration of effects. So thank you for that. I found your responses to the Chair's questions along the way very, very helpful. So many of my questions have been answered, but you've certainly given us plenty to think about. And if there is an opportunity to be able to follow up with questions, I would relish the opportunity to just reflect a little bit further on the submissions you've provided today and the background documentation. But overall, I just want to thank you for your obviously a lot of work, hard work has gone into catching up with where everything's progressed to and making sense of it in a way that has provided some really, really useful clarification and, you know, areas for a great deal of reflection and consideration by us as a panel. So thank you, Hilda.
Yeah, I just echo those sentiments. It's very impressive that you've been able to keep up with what is a very complex thing and make some very intelligent submissions. So I appreciate that. And so on that note, Dr. Fox and Dr. Whittle, we'd prefer that you came back and were fresh to present your personal reflections. One option, which I'm not sure whether you've checked with commissioners, is a Thursday morning reconvene.
Thursday doesn't
work. So what's the earliest time?
Friday morning up until about 1:30.
Friday morning? So, okay. All right, so we'll reconvene for your...
Could we just double-check our calendars? I'm 99% certain we don't have anything on Friday, but it's
just... Just double-check that? Yeah.
It's one of those... COVID days are long days.
Yeah. But how long would it take you to do that?
We'll know tonight. I mean, as soon as we go home and check things, we'll know in a very short
time. So subject to that, we can reconvene on Friday morning here. And I'll be here, and I think even Mr. Jessen will be available on Friday morning. So we'll do that, and that will then conclude the submitters. Can I just take a moment now to talk about the council's timing as well? Where have we got to with that? Is that kicked to the 30th and 1st?
Probably just waiting to hear back from Commissioners, I flicked through a table just to be populated.
So.
And I've got Commissioner Makinson and Commissioner Sweetman's input.
So
let's just have a look. Monday the 20th isn't any good. We could try Wednesday the 22nd in the afternoon. All day Friday on the 24th.
How are those dates for you, Mr. Jessen?
Sorry, sir, it's really hard to hear. This is Ms. Arthur Young here. Just came to follow this dates discussion.
So can you not hear me or can you not
hear Ms. I can hear you, yes, sir. I just couldn't hear Cass or Nick.
Okay, so.
Thank you, sir.
No, probably not.
Okay, so we're clear that we're resuming subject to Drs. Fox and Whittle on the 17th in the morning till 1:30. And then we're, sorry, what did I say? Yeah, 17th. And now we're discussing dates, which I think were the 22nd or 21st and 24th.
Friday the 24th, and then it probably goes through till the 30th and the 1st. I don't know if they can hear me.
Yeah. So.
Well, the 21st I can't do.
Yeah.
I've been emailing Arthur Young this afternoon, and I know she can't do the 22nd. My preference would be to go with the 30th and 1st for the bulk of the council's case. Mm-hmm. But I'm open.
Okay, so let's keep your diaries clear for as much as possible of the 23rd and 24th and the 30th and 31st, and we'll try and populate that. Ms. Arthur Young, if we get through the council's case by the 30th, are you in a position to reply on the 1st, or are you contemplating a decent amount of time after that to work it through so that we're looking potentially at something in the week of the 4th?
Thank you, sir. I was contemplating probably having a little bit of time after the close of the council hearing, just because I council presentation, just because I anticipate some commentary on conditions, and it would be really helpful to have a bit of time on that. Mm-hmm. It's also, I suppose, over to you, sir, whether reply in writing would suit, or whether you'd wish for us to present that reply orally.
Well, we can talk about that. I suspect we'll just have to see. Are you in Auckland or in Wellington?
Auckland.
Okay, well, we'll definitely.
You can see, sir, from my fringe.
we'll aim to fill as much of the 23rd and 24th as is feasible, but also the 30th and 1st. And we will also try and park some time around the 7th and 8th.
Thank you, sir.
For the reply, no, can't do.
No, that's helpful, thank you. No, sorry.
The week of the 4th is out, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, we will allow you more time, but we may take that in writing or do something to jig with it. My concern is that we don't start drifting too much into October and November and losing steam, and then we end up telling me that they're going to do the decision after Christmas, because then we've lost everything in our heads. So that's the need to keep moving. So we've sort of got the end of this week and then the end of the next two following weeks as available times, and we'll just keep in contact about that. Does that sound all right?
Thank you, sir.
And I'll leave it to Mr. Jessen and Ms. Oliver and Ms. Arthur Young to start populating that. And we as commissioners will leave that time available with the idea that we get as much notice sooner rather than later, so that our diaries can be adequately populated and so forth. Does that sound sensible? All right, well, thank you very much. It's been extraordinarily interesting, and I'm very grateful for the technical team for what has been what I think a very seamless and fruitful meeting, and I'm very grateful for everybody's cooperation and getting this through in difficult circumstances. So thank you very much for your attendance, and have a good evening. Thank you.